Abner Mares is a world champion boxer, Olympian, sports commentator, and most importantly, a dad to two little girls. Beloved by abuelas and hardcore fans alike, Abner is a pro at entertaining the world both in and out of the ring. On Blue Wire's new podcast, On the Hook with Abner Mares, we'll hear from Abner, his family, fellow athletes, and other people who made him the boxer and the man he is. One of the things that he's going to discuss on the pod that I'm very interested to hear his thoughts on is the state of boxing. Boxing's a sport I've always really tried to get into, but I haven't been able to, and my friends who are boxing fans tell me all about how boxing used to be. I'm interested to see, or hear, Abner's thoughts on that. And then he'll also talk about, if you're not into boxing, but you still want to hear what Abner's all about, he's talking about sports, music, pop culture, and then, of course, his family life, because that's the most important thing. So listen to On the Hook with Abner Mares wherever you get your podcast. Episodes in English, those will be out on Tuesdays. Episodes in Spanish, those will be out on Wednesdays on Blue Wire.
Blue Wire.
Hey, this is George Kittle, and you're listening to Candlestick Chronicles.
New England sending QB Jimmy Garoppolo to 49ers.
We believe we found the right guy.
Garoppolo, quick pass, caught by Kittle. He dives, and he's in. Touchdown, 49ers. Kittle is gonna go. Touchdown.
Yeah, you heard it there. It's Candlestick Chronicles, a 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. That guy sitting right over there, that's Chris Biederman. He covers the 49ers for the Sacramento Bee. I'm Kyle Madsen. I write about the 49ers over at NinersWire.com, part of the USA Today sports media group. And it started to get hot again, Chris, just like you said it would. I still don't have an air conditioner. So,
welcome to my life.
Yeah, dude. So I have a new strategy for heat beating.
Okay.
And it's opening the windows at night. And then just closing them right before I leave for work around 6 a.m.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Because then I try and lock in that cool night air.
Yeah, I've switched up my shower routine, and I'm starting to shower before bed, so I'll take a cold shower
before
bed rather than the morning. And it's a little weird because, like, throughout the day you feel weird because you haven't had that shower that sort of, like,
that wake
lets
you up
your body know it's a new day.
Yeah.
So I'm still my body's still getting used to having that feeling like at night before bed. But you know, we're doing what we can. It's not going to be warm like this for too much longer, because us people without air conditioning, I mean, it's not fun when it's 90 degrees outside.
It's a tough scene.
And your office/bedroom window faces west and gets a whole lot of sun throughout the day.
Well, the good news for you, speaking of the sun, is on Sunday, you'll get to spend the warmer part of the afternoon at Levi's Stadium getting ready for Sunday Night Football between the 49ers and Rams, and that is what we're going to talk about today. Did that transition work?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So we're going to... Go ahead.
It worked. No, it worked,
okay,
I think.
Cool.
I'm thinking about it. Yeah, I think it worked.
I think it did, too. So the 49ers, they swept the Rams in the season series last year, but the teams are going opposite directions this season. The Niners, they come in at 2-3. The Rams have been very good. They're 4-1, and I don't think it's a stretch to say that the 49ers need this one. This is you fall to 2-4 and 0-2 in the division, and it becomes a very, very deep hole to climb out of, no matter who's coming back and who's getting healthy. And so I think this is an extremely important game for San Francisco. And really, if they lose it, it's like their playoff hopes are on real life support.
If the Niners lose this game, their next six games will be against opponents that are 25-7 combined. So yeah. If they lose this game, it's going to be very...
It's only 29-8, so...
Yeah, it's going to be very hard to... I didn't hear what you just said, but...
It was hilarious.
Okay. But if they lose and have to go to New England next week and then play the Seahawks and the Packers and the Saints and the Buffalo Bills, like, it's going to be tough. I do think they're due to play a whole lot better here coming up, and we'll talk about the reasons why. But it is as much of a must-win game as a game in mid-October can be. I think that's the best way to look at this game. It's not a must win because it's still early October, but being 3-3 is a whole lot better than being 2-4.
Yeah, that's
right.
And 2-4, 2-4 with two losses in the division.
Right.
While one of your division rivals moves to 5-1, the Seahawks will probably move to 6-0. Like at some point, it's not early in the season anymore, and at some point you start running out of games to start catching up.
Right, exactly. Particularly with your trip to play the New England Patriots next week.
And then a trip to Seattle. Like they need to start racking up wins. That's
they need something to start. They need something that makes everybody on that team and in the locker room remember, like, yeah, we're the NFC champs. Like we're actually, right. You know, we are a team that accomplished a lot last year. And they haven't looked anything like that. And there are a lot of reasons that involved, of course. But they need this win just for morale purposes. Otherwise, it's going to be really hard to have any sort of optimism, given what's coming up for them.
Yeah, and I think there's a level of desperation for the 49ers. But I also think the Rams are going in knowing, hey, we can bury San Francisco with a win here. Like there's a level of, it's obviously different, but I think there's a level of desperation for the Rams as well. But for the 49ers, we've talked about this before. We're going to talk about it now, and we will probably talk about it again in the future. It's going to come down a lot to the play of Jimmy Garoppolo because the defensive side, we know how banged up they are. We know they're probably going to give up some points. Can the 49ers keep up? They couldn't do it against Miami. Garoppolo got benched at the end of the first half. Kyle Shanahan said on Monday that he didn't hurt his ankle worse and said that he will either be the same or better. And then on Wednesday said that the plan for Garoppolo is the same as it was against the Dolphins. And if he struggles, they'll sit him at halftime. Do you think that that is a good idea?
So I was at practice today. I've been at practice the last 2 days and I've watched Garoppolo very closely, and he's doing everything that he would do if he were 100% healthy. Like in the portion of practice that we get to watch, which is usually just about the first 20 minutes or half an hour when it's individual drills, Garoppolo against air is rolling out and running play action passes and throwing on the run. And doing a lot of those things that obviously he's going to have to do on Sunday if he's going to run the offense like we're used to watching this offense run. So he looks fine. Like I would have to have prior knowledge that he's dealing with an ankle injury to look at Garoppolo based on these warmups, which clearly aren't football, aren't actual football like in a game situation. Mm-hmm. I would have to have prior knowledge to know that something was wrong, right? So, like, he looks fine. So I understand why Kyle Shanahan would look at that and then say, yeah, I mean, he looks good in practice. He's doing everything we need him to do. And then Garoppolo would actually get hit in a game, and it only takes one time for his ankle to start bothering him again. And then you're looking at a scenario where he can't push off his right foot like he could in the second quarter of that Dolphins game last week. So to me, like, in order for Garoppolo to play well, you need the offensive line to play well, and you need to run the ball effectively.
Right.
I think because we've seen the 49ers play that brand before, and I think that's kind of their identity, even though they don't have the same horses on defense right now, they need to take the ball out of Garoppolo's hands, let him get healthy, run the ball, and win games like they were early last season when we were all wondering if Garoppolo was even capable of winning games with his arm on his own.
Right.
And we learn that later, but I think that's the brand the 49ers need to get to right now, which, you know, might not do Garoppolo any favors necessarily, because people will only stop questioning him, I think, if he puts up big numbers.
Sure.
But I just think looking at the state of the roster and how the 49ers are constructed and how they play, I think the answer for them is to win the line of scrimmage, win on the ground, try to win time of possession, and keep Garoppolo out of a dropback situation where he has to throw 30 or 40 times. That's their formula right now. And we'll have to see if they can hit it, because the offensive line has really been struggling these last couple weeks.
And one of the things that's interesting is the offensive line has struggled pass blocking for sure. But when you look at it, it's really hard to quantify blocking, but when you look at their run blocking grades on Pro Football Focus, it hasn't been as maybe bad as we think. And Raheem Mostert looked really good last week running the football. The Niners just got in a spot where they couldn't run the football, and then Trent Williams on that 4th-and-1 play to Jerick McKinnon got beat pretty bad, and the play didn't work. But that was one snap. It was an important snap, but that was one snap. If they're going to run block well, I think it makes pass blocking easier for them because it makes the Niners' entire offense more effective. And so that's where I think it really starts, is keeping the game script where they can continue running it. They don't need to necessarily be ahead. They just can't fall behind 14-0.
Right.
You know, they need to, even if it's 10-0, like they need to keep the game in a spot where handing it to Raheem Mostert 4 or 5 plays in a row, if he's chewing up 5-6 yards a carry, they need to just do that. Because that's, like you just laid out, that's their offensive identity. We wanted to maybe see a little bit of a step forward from Garoppolo, but we're certainly not going to see it when he's dealing with a high ankle sprain. So they need to get back to what works. I couldn't agree more with that.
Yeah, and the other part of it, too, is that, you know, I think we did talk about it before this pod and I think on the last episode, but that, you know, the Niners haven't had their starting quarterback and receivers and tight end and running back all practicing together at all this season in full until this week. So there's still that aspect of it. They don't have the timing and the chemistry and the reps, frankly, to be in a good spot. And they're not helped out at all by the fact, or by the way the offensive line is playing, I should say. And I wrote about that for the Sacramento Bee this week. And one thing that was interesting was, you know, what the Dolphins were doing essentially is lining 3 defensive tackles over the 3 interior offensive linemen in a bare 3-4 front. And basically what that does is it clogs the middle so much, it prevents the guards in the center from pulling and getting to the second level of the defense, which is such a staple of Kyle Shanahan's running game, right? So if you can gum up the running game that way, and then against this 49ers offensive line right now that's struggling to communicate, if you can be really good at disguising who's a pass rusher, who's dropping into coverage, who's blitzing, and if you're running a bare 3-4 front, you can blitz up the middle and have linebackers running free like we saw in the Dolphins game. You're going to give the 49ers offense problems if they're in a position where they have to throw the ball. So we talk, you know, complementary football is obviously a cliche, but the thing is, like, what happens to the 49ers defense directly impacts how Kyle Shanahan is calling a game on offense. Right. Although I would push back on the idea, you know, Shanahan said they got down by 14 points and then they had to throw the ball. It was like, it was still the first half.
I
didn't think they had to abandon the running game. I know they gave up a 3rd touchdown pretty quickly, and then when you're down by 3 scores, maybe that's a little bit different. But anyway, the point on complementary football is that if your defense isn't stopping a nosebleed, then it's going to change what you're trying to do offensively. And I think what Kyle Shanahan is trying to do is set everything up with the running game like the 49ers were able to do in the first half of last year. And then ultimately, as the season went on, I think it loosened defenses up and then allowed Garoppolo to be better with his arm because defenses had to account for everything the 49ers were doing in the running game. And that just hasn't happened yet because the offensive line play has been a little bit shoddy and Raheem Mostert's been out of the lineup. They've had to rely a lot on Jerick McKinnon as their number one back after he didn't play for 2 years. So, yeah, it's just when you deal with injuries and have so many different moving parts like the 49ers have right now, it's going to be really hard to win games. And I think during the COVID season in particular, with the offseason and practice time being what it's been, it makes it even more difficult for sure.
So I want to stick on the offensive line a little bit because you wrote about that over at the Sacramento Bee. And sackbee.com/49ers. You can go find it there. And What did you learn that maybe you didn't know or hadn't thought of going in? Or was it just kind of a matter of what you were observing is just kind of how it is? Like, what did you glean from your discussions?
Yeah, Kyle Shanahan said yesterday, and I want to find the quote, that playing offensive line is a lot like playing zone defense in basketball, and that it takes a lot of practice to do that, and the 49ers just haven't had the same level of practice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I get it. I think it's difficult it's probably difficult to navigate through this offseason and all of that and get everybody on the same page when you have two new starters along your offensive line, which is 40%. You know, that can be tough, but the whole thing with Trent Williams was that, you know, he should be integrating easily because he's familiar with this offense and the coaching staff, because it's the same, a lot of the same people he worked with in Washington, right? It's the same scheme. It hasn't been super smooth for Trent Williams, as good as he looked in training camp and as good as he looks sometimes in games. And for the most part, he's good. It's just when he makes mistakes, they're glaring, and they've been glaring. I think the same is true for Mike McGlinchey. But they're just not on the same page. Even Raheem Mostert today was talking about, you know, things that happened in pass protection, and he misheard a call, he said, and then went to block the wrong guy on a play that they allowed a sack. And for whatever reason, and I haven't been able to talk to anybody and figure out exactly where the breakdown is, but from the coaches making the call, or, you know, the quarterback deciphering his responsibilities and relaying that to everybody else, there's something happening somewhere that's not allowing everybody to be on the same page at all times. And I think defenses too, when they're hitting Jimmy Garoppolo, know that that's the case with the 49ers offense. And if you hit Garoppolo on his bum ankle, he's probably going to throw some passes that will be interceptable at some point, right? So defenses are pinning their ears back on the 49ers right now in a way that the only way they can stop that is to start controlling the tempo of the game. And the only way they can control the tempo of the game is if their defense stops somebody. So Emmanuel Mosley's probably going to be back this week. That's a big thing for the secondary, obviously, in place of Brian Allen, who was nothing short of a disaster on Sunday. It's not necessarily Allen's fault. He was put in a really tough spot, like we said earlier this week. But that is what it is. So there's a game script that Sunday night's game needs to follow for the 49ers to win, given the fragile state of their roster right now. But in terms of the offensive line, I think a lot of their stuff is correctable. I think they have enough talent to play at a much higher level. But, you know, I think that's clearly been an emphasis, and I saw it at practice today and yesterday. They're working hard on combination blocks, which are those blocks that are so effective on the outside, when you have sort of like a moving picket fence on like an outside run, and mm-hmm. George Kittle is passing, you know, a defensive end to a tackle and then moving out and getting to a linebacker or a DB. And then you see those running lanes clear down the field, which is a reason why Raheem Mostert can break a 60-yard touchdown. Like, the 49ers are working a lot on those plays because those haven't, you know, they did happen for Mostert twice early in the season, but they haven't been happening since he's been out of the lineup. So they're going to need some of that in their game. And I think once they can prevent defenses from pinning their ears back and blitzing and disguising things and stressing the 49ers' communication, then I think the 49ers are going to be in a position they want to be in, which is we can do whatever we want because we know the running game works. If the running game doesn't work, the 49ers cannot do whatever they want, because Jimmy Garoppolo is compromised to the point right now on his ankle that you absolutely do not want him throwing 40 times a game.
Right. And that's going to be the biggest key, I think, on offense is, like, it exactly what I said earlier. Like, it has to look like a 2019 49ers game.
Yep.
If they're going to have any shot at winning. Before we hit the break, I do want to get back to something that you touched on. Emmanuel Mosley coming back is huge. At least it appears he's going to be back and cleared concussion protocol.
Yeah, I think he will be.
He had a full practice on Thursday. He was in a non-contact jersey Wednesday. Shed the non-contact jersey Thursday, which puts him on track to play Sunday. And the Niners are going to have two starting caliber cornerbacks for the first time since week three. And it's the first time all year they're going to start the same combination of cornerbacks, yeah. Right?
Yeah, the first time one combination of corners has gotten more than one game.
Right.
Yeah, five different
Verrett
combos.
Verrett and Mosley started week three.
Yeah, and that would be presumably, I think it's going to be Verrett, Mosley, and then Jamar Taylor in the slot, and then you'll have Akella Witherspoon healthy backing up the starters this week. He hasn't been on the injury report after what happened last week. I think it's wise that Witherspoon is not reporting any sort of hamstring discomfort to the yeah, training staff, yikes. Because I don't know that that worked out all that well last week. But yeah, that's the secondary should be in much better shape if Emmanuel Mosley comes back and is at 100%. He's a clear and obvious upgrade over what the 49ers would have had otherwise.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's really important because I think the structure of the 49ers defense is sound enough to where if they're not, it, you know, if they don't have a weak link that another team can just pick on over and over again, I think they're solid enough to still be good enough for them to win as long as they play well offensively.
Right.
Right. Like, it's not a defense that's going to dominate a game, but I think at home, that a lot of the guys have been in the system long enough to play sound enough to where, you know, the defense could hold the Rams to 20 points, which theoretically could be plenty for the 49ers to win that game if they can score, right?
Right.
And so I think that's possible. But again, like we say, or, you know, I mentioned they, if they don't have anywhere, like in the secondary, you can just pick on. I think Jamar Taylor might be that guy this week in the slot starting in place of Kaywan Williams because Cooper Kupp is really, really good in the slot. And he's, I mean, there. If I were Sean McVay, put it this way, I would center my game plan around Cooper Kupp against Jamar Taylor. If yep. Emmanuel Mosley's back covering Robert Woods and, you know, with Jason Verrett on the other side playing well right now, that's what I would do. And if I'm the 49ers, I really have to be concerned about that this week. I think
who in 20 seconds, who do you feel more confident in covering Cooper Kupp? Jamar Taylor or Fred Warner?
Fred Warner, because I know Warner will.
They're
going to
do those drag routes, and if they're doing that, I think it would be best if Fred Warner is the one chasing Cooper Kupp.
I think Warner will always mentally, like, he'll never be in a bad spot because he'll never have a mental breakdown.
Right.
And he's more athletic than a lot of linebackers, so not that he can run with Cooper Kupp, but he can run with Cooper Kupp probably better than most linebackers would. And just given his intelligence and his knowledge of the splits and alignments and the routes that he's going to have to know coming out of the slot, I trust Warner in that spot with his brain power over Taylor, who might be more athletically equipped, but I don't trust him to cover Kupp because I think he's just not as, you know, as naturally gifted a football thinker as Warner is.
Okay, that's fair. I do want to look something up real quick, though, because you just kind of threw out there that Warner probably can't run with Cooper Kupp. Warner 4.64 in the 40 at the combine, Cooper Kupp 4.62. So,
I mean, Kupp's faster.
Would you like to rethink your argument?
I mean,
that's I hey, thought, both of those round down to 4.6.
What were their three cone times?
Oh, that's a great 6.75 for Kupp and 6.9 for Warner.
Okay, that's
which is
that's
pretty
my
nice.
Case.
So
that's my case. The three cone scores.
Okay, but here's bench reps. I'm done. let's get to a break.
All right. Even though sports had a break, your business did not. You have to keep on moving, and that's what makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your research that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire, with 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month. Indeed is going to give you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. $75 is pretty tasty. So go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. BLUEWIRE. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. It's been back for 5 weeks, going on 6. And man, I could not be more excited to have the NFL back in my life, and college football to an extent. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in the action at Bet Online. That is what I have been doing, and it's been awesome. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season, and that is not an exaggeration, folks. From game spreads, totals, to team players, to team player and coaching props, but team players also works. BetOnline gives you more football, very much a team game. BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. And it's not just the season opening bonuses, folks. There's all sorts of sign up bonuses. So head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all of those great bonuses when you sign up. Don't forget to use the promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, 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 all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. I want to talk real quick about the Kyle Shanahan versus Sean McVay rivalry that they have going on that exists. I think it exists. They were both coaches together in Washington. They got hired as head coaches the same year. Their first game was a epic back and forth at Levi Stadium on a Thursday night with Brian Hoyer against Jared Goff.
Brian Hoyer just chucking it all over the yard.
Just slinging the pill. And remember, there was the like kind of really ticky-tack offensive PI on Trent Taylor that stalled out the Niners last drive. Really incredible game. Both teams had more than 45 points. I think the Rams won like 48-46.
That was easily the most enjoyable game of the first half of that season.
It wasn't 48-46. I think it was 41-39 was the final. Anyways, super fun game. And then the Rams kind of dominated for a while, and then the Niners obviously won their two matchups last year, including a Week 16 win. That was the game where the Niners, you'll probably remember, converted 2 3rd-and-16s late. Super fun game. But what's been funny has been watching the Shanahan-McVay public preference teeter-totter.
Yeah.
Because in 2018, while the 49ers were going 4-12 because Jimmy Garoppolo tore his ACL, the Rams were going to the Super Bowl, and Sean McVay was the guy. If you were Facebook friends with Sean McVay, you got a call about a head coaching interview in the NFL. Everybody wanted a piece of it. But then last season, while the Rams struggled, the Niners were going to the Super Bowl, Kyle Shanahan was the guy. It was Kyle Shanahan is far and away, he's this and that, and he's Kyle Shanahan, he's the best. Today, I produce a radio show in the Bay Area. I have never mentioned that, but I want people to know it. I produce a radio show at 95.7 The Game from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And today, we kind of threw it out there, Shanahan McVay, and it was like unanimous people saying McVay. And that's such a weird thing for me. And I think it says less about McVay. Like, he's done a really nice job making these adjustments. They run way more two tight end stuff than they did early last year, and especially in 2018. They're on pace to more than double their multiple tight end numbers from last year. He's made some adjustments, and now they're kind of rolling again. Whereas Shanahan is under this like microscope in the Bay Area, and it's really weird to me that every time something goes wrong, like, people are still nitpicking decisions from the Super Bowl, and his record gets cited. It's like, well, he's not even a 500 coach, and it's, I don't know, man. It's just, it's weird. Like, people just ignore that in 2018, Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt. And then this year, with a 2-3 start, they lost two of their three or four best players on defense and are now sitting at, with Williams, Sherman, and Bosa out. That's what, three of their five best defensive players?
Yeah.
On a team that's kind of built around its defense. I don't know. It's a weird back and forth that only really exists when these two teams play, and I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah, I think the elephant in the room is that Sean McVay very much exists because, in large part, not only, like, Sean McVay's a very good coach, right, but Sean McVay's offensive system is heavily influenced by Kyle Shanahan because that's what it is. It's Kyle Shanahan's system.
Right. Without a
so fullback. I think that has to be acknowledged as when you talk about it. But I also think there isn't really a right answer. Like, I think both teams have gone to the Super Bowl. Both teams have lost it. I know the 49ers probably lost the game in more excruciating fashion, but I think their overall Super Bowl performance was better than the Rams against the Patriots. We all love to have these conversations and, like, create an answer and stick to it and make it super polarizing, but I don't think there is an answer right now.
Right.
I think it's still too small of a sample size. I think both teams have dealt with their own myriad of factors that are sort of outside the coach's hands. Like, believe me, I think Kyle Shanahan is smart enough to understand that he shouldn't have coached Nick Bosa and D Ford into injuries and Richard Sherman into injuries. Like, it's, you know, there's that's, I'm obviously, like, that's not Shanahan's fault, but, like, you know, a lot of this is out of the coach's hands, but because the coach is the face of the franchise,
right,
and the one who's responsible for everything, they're the one who's going to get blamed for everything. And so, you know, how much do we blame McVay for the team going 9-7 last year, which isn't a terrible year? In a lot of cases, that would have went to the, under this format this year with seven playoff teams, they would have made it last year. I just don't think there is a right answer. I think it's still too small of a sample size. I don't think head coaches are responsible for absolutely everything that happens with their team. I do think they need to be accountable for everything that happens for their team, but that's different than being responsible.
What if they're both awesome coaches?
Yeah, they're both really good coaches. I think if either of them ever got fired anytime soon, they would have a job within the week.
Oh, my God. I don't want to go through it now because it's not that important, but I would set the over under at like 6.5 teams who would fire their coach to hire either McVay or Shanahan.
Yeah. Like, I think a case can be made that if you were doing a coaching draft, they're both going top 5 or 6.
Yes.
No matter what.
I think that's probably right.
And it probably comes down to preference. I don't think there's a real concrete answer. I think if I were to judge Kyle Shanahan, I would do it by Jimmy Garoppolo's record as a starter for the 49ers. Yes. And that is 20-7 in the regular season. And then obviously 2-1 in the postseason. 20-7 is pretty good. And, you know, obviously that's probably going to level off because now you're getting sort of the classic NFL parity thing, because there's so much fluctuation in the league every year because of injuries and all the other external factors. I think they're both really good coaches, and I don't know that we necessarily need to define who's better and who isn't.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's a very measured take.
it is a funny conversation, as you bring up, that it changes purely based on the team success every year.
It's gonna change. It's, dude, it's gonna change on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. If the, it's gonna change on Sunday.
If the 49ers win, let's say they put it together and they win 31-20. It's gonna be, wow, Shanahan, yep, schooled McVay. You know, it's just, it's a weird, I don't know. We sometimes go into these long kind of digressions about the state of discourse. And that was just one to me that really jumped out today. When people who called the station 7 months ago, what month is it? October. People who called the station 6 or 8 months ago. Wait, hang on. I got this. People who called the station in January were saying, Shannon, those same people were calling, oh, McVay, obviously. It's, they're both great. They're both awesome.
And yeah, I, think I read
if,
a...
If you swap them, if you just... If in 2017, the 49ers hired Sean McVay and the Rams hired Kyle Shanahan, and I don't think there's a lot of things different.
No, there's a reasonable chance. I mean, I have no idea, but it's like a butterfly effect conversation. But like, right, there's a reasonable chance both of them like are still good enough to take their teams to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's probably right.
This whole conversation, tonight I read this, and I think Marcus Thompson published it before Game 6 of the NBA Finals, basically talking about Marcus Thompson, the great writer at The Athletic MG2. And columnist. He wrote about the discourse surrounding LeBron James, and if you haven't read it, I highly suggest you do, because it's about the conversation we talk about players, and for whatever reason, us as humans, cape for one side of any argument and then become very passionate about it, even though we should probably just stop arguing about it and just watch whatever's happening. That's sort of what, like, the Shanahan McVay's, the whole thing, that's what it's like to me. But yeah, we don't need to argue about who's better, who would you rather have, for every sports topic. I know it's popular on television shows and things like that, but we can just like enjoy everybody and just acknowledge that like people are good at their jobs without needing to rank them. I think
it's really cool watching good athletes and coaches be good at their jobs.
Yeah, it's gonna be a fun game.
You got a prediction for me?
A prediction, man. So I'm going to pick the Rams.
I am too.
And I think I'm going to pick the Rams by like 7 or 8 points. But I do think, like, I mean, this is just based on everything we know about the teams, right? Like, the Rams are playing well. They're playing really well on both sides of the ball right now. They have Aaron Donald, who might be the worst player for the 49ers to play it out of anybody in the league right now because of the state of the offensive line and how he's really good on the inside, but he can also stress the tackles on the outside. And I think Brandon Staley, the Rams' new defensive coordinator, is doing a really good job. And they have a lot of linebackers who have a lot of sacks, which indicates to me they're probably good at blitzing.
There's no Van Ginkle on their roster, though.
They do not have a Van Ginkle. That's true. Jalen Ramsey's playing a lot in the slot, and if I were the Rams, I would have Jalen Ramsey shadow George Kittle. And if he's able to at least limit Kittle to a modest day in the passing game, I think that's going to be really tough on the 49ers. But if they can run right at Ramsey and Kittle just blocks him 20 yards down the field like he probably could, then I think that's a 49ers advantage for sure. But I just think given the way both teams are going, they're clearly in trending in opposite directions based on what we've seen in recent weeks. But I wouldn't be shocked if the 49ers came out and played like a team that the public had buried over the last couple weeks, and they play with some pride and actually do play a good game.
Yeah.
And look a little bit closer to the team that we saw last year, particularly if they can run the ball. If they can do that, then it might end up being closer, but I think the Rams are just more complete. They're obviously healthier, and they're going in a better way right now, while the 49ers are still sort of trying to find their footing, given all their issues with the offensive line and given all the The fact that they're just getting their core guys on offense to play together now.
Yeah. What's your prediction? I think the Rams win, but I think we come away from it going, like, at the top of the pod, we said if the Niners fall to 2-4, it's going to be really hard to get back. But I think they play well enough that our Tuesday pod is like, okay, well, they lost, but they looked really good. And if this play goes differently, they wind up winning. So now you feel a little more optimistic with them going to New England and going to Seattle and facing Green Bay on a short week and then going to New Orleans. Like, you feel a little bit better about those games. But I do think they lose, and my in a one score game, maybe the Rams get a late like field goal or something to stretch it to 9 or 10. But my big prediction is that at some point a popular thing to say on the internet is going to be Kyle Shanahan / Sean McVay is in his bag tonight. I predict that there's going to be some weird like Debo Samuel jet sweep reverse to Brandon Ayuk with, and then there's going to be the Twitter video guy who's going, oh, watch Kyle Juszczyk. This is brilliant by Shanahan because he starts to block this way, but then goes back the other way. Yeah, that's my, I think we're going to see some stuff like that. And I think we're going to see the Niners kind of dig into their playbook a little bit deeper than maybe we'd normally see in a week 6 game.
Can I,
31, 20, I'm going to say like 9 or 10. 31-26.
Okay.
Kind of a weird score, but that's what I'm going with.
One you mentioned game. Tweeting about Kyle Shanahan being in his bag.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to see the Kyle Juszczyk option pitch.
Ooh, okay. I like that.
I think we're at the point of desperation where there's going to be some trickeration, and it might look a little bit like that Saints game last year, because desperate times call for desperate measures, and you're going to have to make some plays. You're going to have to manufacture some plays with scheme this week in a way that you're going to need it. I mean, you're going to need to score against the Rams, I think.
Give me Debo Samuel lined up.
I think it's going to be to Mostert.
Give me Debo Samuel lined up in the backfield with a Brandon Ayuk motion followed by chaos.
Didn't Samuel have a rushing touchdown from the backfield against the Rams last year?
I don't think so.
I think he did.
He might have.
I think it was the game that Garoppolo had the 2 3rd and 16s. I could be wrong, but there was a game, and I believe it was a night game last year, that Debo Samuel had a rushing touchdown from the backfield.
He had the one against the Panthers, which I think might be like one of my favorite Shanahan play calls of all time.
Yeah, that was like out of the slot.
Yes. That one was awesome.
Yeah.
Go look up Debo Samuel's rushing touchdown against the Panthers. It's like one of my favorite Kyle Shanahan plays ever.
Debo Samuel, 19-yard rush, second quarter.
Oh, well, they couldn't have been on a sweep or anything, so.
No, I I remember the game. I think he lined up in the backfield and it was a run to the left.
They had one last year where I think it was against the Seahawks where Debo lined up in the backfield and Raheem Mostert was split out in the slot and then went in motion across the formation and they did a handoff to Debo. I remember that. Anyways, the moral of this story while Chris does that is I think we're going to see language earmuffs. If you have children near you, turn it down and skip ahead 30 seconds. I think we're going to see a lot of weird shit. Like they're going to have to start manufacturing some plays somehow if their offensive line isn't going to be great. And I
found
think
the
that,
play.
I think they're going to do that. Were you correct?
Hold on. It was right after a Kyle Juszczyk screen that was successful. He's in shotgun.
Boy, if you were
Debo Samuel. gets a sweep. He lines up in the backfield and then takes a sweep over left end, okay, and beats Taylor Rapp, and then is tackled by Jalen Ramsey as he leans over. And now he's doing a handshake with Emmanuel Sanders. They're doing the little rowboat thing. I don't know what it's called. Cooler people than me would know the name of that.
I knew that rowboat thing was.
Yeah, he was in the backfield.
Cool.
Yeah.
I can't think of a better way to cap the pod. Chris was right, everybody. Chris was right. Congratulations, Chris Biederman. We're going to end the podcast now so you can go. We have 15 more things to talk about, but Chris wants to end the pod so he can go bask in his rightness. So.
It's not true.
Basking in rightness is my new band name. Never mind. Football podcast. Subscribe, rate, review, Candlestick Chronicles. We will see you guys next week after the 49ers Rams game. See you.
That's what you call ending with a bang.